Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning and happy Easter to you. My favorite show of the year, that and Christmas, definitely. Because we can hook it all up, we can put it together. Because your prayer on Sunday should not be limited to Sunday, and your prayer should not be limited to an esoteric, ethereal level. It should help you where the rubber meets the road. It should help you in time of crisis in a functional way. We celebrate the resurrection of Christ tomorrow. Today he was in the tomb. Yesterday he was crucified. That has to have meaning to you. Meaning at work. Meaning in crisis. Meaning when you suffer. So that you can prosper. You can prosper from his message to you. Now I didn't understand that as a child. I didn't understand that as a young man. I learned that through medicine. The life of Christ, for me as a doctor, is an analogy, it's a metaphor for us all, because it teaches us how to heal. In that story, the story of Christ celebrated tomorrow, is a story of how to heal in the functional sense. To study the life of Christ is to study the epic of healing. All the way, if I can say this, to the bank. To prosperity is what I mean. To take it down out of the clouds. It did not start that way for me. It started for me in the clouds. I was raised Roman Catholic. And I remember very, very clearly my first Holy Communion, which was a disappointment, because when I ate the body of Christ, and I, of course, that host is dipped in the wine. When I ate the body of Christ and tasted the wine, I didn't feel any different. Now, I didn't have a lot of people to talk to back when I was in school at St. Robert Bellarmine back in the 60s. You just did what you were told to do. You didn't have a conversation about it. You were told that your first Holy Communion was a big deal, and that your parents and relatives would be there, and that they would take pictures of you, and that you would be focused upon, and that you had a ritual to perform, and if you did, well, you didn't get beat up. That's kind of the truth. So it was a lot of fun if you went along, but you see, if you questioned, well, you didn't question, so it wasn't even an issue. But I remember not feeling any different. I remember being 5, 6 years old and not feeling any different. Something had happened a few years earlier on Easter. Well, I didn't really understand what Easter meant. This was before my Holy Communion. I didn't understand what Easter meant at 5 or 4 years old, but I understood the Easter Bunny. I also understood at 4 what it was to lie. I understood lying was wrong. I understood you got spanked for lying. I understood that lying was a sin. I understood that lying was something you wouldn't and shouldn't do. And then on Easter, I caught my mother planting an Easter egg underneath a seat on the couch. I saw her do it. And I knew that I was going to go on an Easter egg hunt. And when she walked out of the room, I ran under the couch and got the egg and said, "Mom, I saw you put this under the couch." And she looked at me and I could see she was embarrassed. I was 4 years old. I was precocious. And I said to her, "There's no Easter Bunny." And she felt it was justified to explain to me that, no, there wasn't an Easter Bunny. But you see, I mean, it wasn't a mistake. But it occurred because the minute I heard that, well, you know where I went. Well, that means there's no Santa Claus. Then I had her. You see, the Easter Bunny, who really cared about the Easter Bunny? When you're 4 or 5 years old, you don't really understand Easter. You don't really understand the real meaning of resurrection. You don't even have a concept. You're in preschool. You're not even in kindergarten. But you know that there's something big about Santa Claus. Because he comes down the chimney and he gives you gifts. And it's a sacred thing. It's mysterious. You go to bed at night and you're excited and you wake up and underneath that tree are all these wonderful toys. And you remember? And you wake up and it's mysterious. And there it is. There's no Santa Claus. So I had two notches under my belt when I received my first Holy Communion. There was no Easter Bunny. I knew that there was no Santa Claus. And now I don't feel a lot different. Now, you got to remember, you had the whole weight of the clergy on you here. The Roman Catholic Church, St. Robert Bellarmine, in 1964 or so, in New York City. The nuns. The future, your future as a altar boy, as a choir boy. The accolades of praise behind, well, just following the ritual and doing well in it and being respected for it, not getting beat up like some of your friends. It was an honor bestowed to you by the church to participate in the sacred sacraments. And here we go. Strike what? Strike three. Not strike three, but here was another one. I don't feel any different. And they told me I would feel different. Now, St. Robert Bellarmine Church in Queens. You can look it up on the map. New York City, Queens, Bayside, Queens. St. Robert Bellarmine was a bishop in the 1500s who executed Giordano Bruno, part of the Galileo, Kepler, Tycho Brahe lineage of astronomers, of scientists, the early men of the Renaissance who claimed that the sun, not the earth, was the center of the solar system. St. Robert Bellarmine beheaded this man. Hint. Hint. Look, everybody at every time in world history either supports the scam, has no consciousness about it, or executes the scam. St. Robert Bellarmine was not an ignorant man. He was a bishop. He was ordained a saint. So he cuts the head off Giordano Bruno because he will not recant. They imprison Galileo the last 20, 30 years of his life simply because he said the sun, not the earth, was the center of the solar system. I know we don't do those things today to people. We're evolved now. We're beyond war. We're beyond all the cardinal sins. But Robert Bellarmine did. Well, he's canonized a saint. That was heresy back then. The fix was in, and the Vatican, it ran the show. Now, just south of the Vatican, in Calabria, is where my people were from, practicing Catholics. And in the 1400s, all the way up to when my grandmother emigrated to America, being the early 1900s, those practicing Catholics were very concerned about two things, mortal sin and their next meal. So growing up, I went to church with my anthropology and my theology and my experiences. And every Sunday, I went to Mass. In fact, right up to the eighth grade, every Sunday, I went to Mass. In fact, I'd go to Mass during the week. In fact, before school, I'd go to 6 o'clock Mass. It was me and a bunch of nuns. The nuns. Really, the nuns. Sister Helen James. Sister Grace Ann. Sister Rita Maria. The nuns. The nuns, the instruments of that theology. Of that theology, and I got to tell you, I wish I could remember a friendly nun. 8 years of Catholic school. I wish I could remember one nun who was kind. Now, why was that? Not the scope of this show. And forgive them, for they know not what they do. Pawns. Pawns of a hierarchy. Suffering as much as anyone within it. No, you say, kind people. Those schools back then, I know not today, but those schools back then were filled with this. Nuns who beat you bloody. Hundreds of stories I could tell you. Not the scope for today. I bring it up because you have to understand the context in which, as a little boy, and many of you can relate, I'm sure, whether you were Lutheran, Baptist, Presbyterian, it doesn't matter. Roman Catholic, it doesn't matter. You can remember these rituals we were asked to participate in, and yet our physical experience, our emotional experience, was a little different than what these rituals suggested. But you got to forgive it. And I agree. You got to forgive it. You see? Because we were just little kids. And what do little kids matter? But there was one more. There was one more experience. It was called confirmation. In the sixth grade or the fifth grade, I can't remember which grade, honestly. I was 10 or 11. I know I wasn't 12. You practiced, you studied all the different rituals to receive your holy confirmation. And this was a big day. Now, remember, at 10 or 11, especially if you're Italian, especially if you're eating cheese with enough toxic hormone in it to kill a cow, you're about to reach puberty, which we all did at about 10 or 11 or 12. So there you are with your hormones firing. You're starting to change. You're starting to feel immortal. 11-year-old kids feel that they're immortal. Their connection is so powerful. I mean, I have patients that will tell me that 10 or 11, they'd stand in a tree and leap from the tree with wings only to break their bones. But they were sure they could fly. Do you remember those days of immortality when those hormones raged so high, so vast, that you could do anything? Well, while that's going on, you're walking up to the altar, and you've practiced as a good young Catholic, a neophyte, being initiated. And you're an altar boy and a choir boy, and you're studying. And on that great day, the bishop appears, the bishop of the diocese. It is his job to bestow upon you your holy confirmation. And there he is with his hat and the staff, and you walk up to the bishop, and your parents are watching you, and they're taking pictures and all these different things. There are relatives around. Your grandparents are crying. This wonderful event. And you're waiting for something to happen. And you walk up to the bishop and you declare yourself. And you look at the bishop and the bishop looks at you. And then you walk down off the altar. And there it is again. You don't feel any different. And so you ask yourself, and by then you're old enough to ask yourself, you ask yourself, am I any different? And when you tell yourself, no, I don't feel different, I don't look different, I don't seem different, after today, no one's treating me any differently, I'm going to go back to school tomorrow or the next day and get my ears beat in. And then you ask your friends, are you any different? And then you look at your friends and you want to observe that they're different. And no one's different. It happened, and it didn't. You studied for 3 months. You got out of school early. You memorized everything you need to memorize. The nuns made sure of that. If you caught up, messed up, goofed up, they beat you into submission. And there it is, the great event.